Have you ever had one of those days where everything just sort of falls into place, right? Where a challenge is set before you, and really before you even have any ability or chance to do anything, everything kind of just gets gift wrapped, and everything is solved, and your challenge is over, and it's just one of those great moments. Yeah, no. Well. Every now and again, those happen, where everything is just gift-wrapped for you and dropped in front of you. When we set the date for our congregational meeting about our mission spending plan, I never looked at the reading for the day. And on Tuesday, when we were going to have Bible study, and I was preparing for that, and I turned to the lectionary lessons, and I looked those over, man, there was a moment that I said, oh, this is one of those moments. I mean, imagine the coincidence of the mission spending plan meeting and the parable of the talents. So the parable of talents, right? The servants are given the task of caring for the master's estate while he is on a journey. One is given 5 talents, then the other 2, then one, third one is given just 1 talent. So just so we're clear, right, the talent is a Greek monetary unit, and a really large one. And we can debate whether it was a silver talent or a gold talent, but it was a lot. It was a lot of money. Well, anyway, the first 2 servants take their money and use it. In the process, they both double the amount that the master has given them, all right? Now, the third servant, though, he's in a pickle. He's afraid of the master, and he just buries that talent in the ground and holds on to it until the master is going to return. And sure enough, when the master returns, he is not happy with this servant. Instead of hearing the "well done, good and faithful servant" that the master tells the first 2, he's accused of being wicked and lazy. Instead of being invited into the joy of his master, well, the servant's cast out into the outer darkness where there's much weeping and gnashing of teeth. So this mission spending plan meeting and this reading, I mean, preachers could get giddy with this possibility. I mean, it's just like being given the permission to just out and out, lay it on the congregation. Don't be like that wicked and lazy servant. Make sure you do your part for the spending plan. I mean, oh, gift wrapped, I tell you, gift wrapped and set before me. I mean, nothing like making use of the wrath of God to scare you all into giving and supporting the congregation's budget. I mean, if I'd done that, I certainly would not be the first one to do it. Well, maybe I might think that that was a little distasteful. And so instead, I'd simply turn this parable into a little pep talk or a morality lesson. Talk about doing one's best. Or I could just turn it, I could take that where Jesus tells the third servant to, you could have at least given it to the bankers and I'd get my own with interest. I could turn it into a prop for capitalism. I could take this parable and prop up capitalism. So, let Jesus condone the entire banking system that we have. You know, maybe that it could do it that way. And it, you know, but all of these approaches, all of these ways, like, would be completely and utterly off the mark. Not at all what they're about. And so let me be really clear. Using today's reading to bolster giving and to support the spending plan just is not faithful. Ripping this parable out of context renders its good news powerless. By taking the parable from where it belongs, we're left with false targets, we're left with false aims, we're left with untruths. And that gift-wrapped sermon is an illusion. The peril, you see, lies in removing Jesus' parable from the proclamation of the kingdom. What he's been talking about for all of Matthew's gospel. The kingdom is this, is that event coming soon at the end of time when God puts an end to the brokenness of the world, wiping away hunger and thirst, grief and death. Jesus' whole teaching section here in Matthew 25 is focused on those final things when God sets all the wrongs to right through the words of judgment. So the theologian Stanley Hauerwas has written, once any parable is divorced from its apocalyptic content, apocalyptic, that's the end of the world scenario, misreading is inevitable, he says. Jesus is not using this parable to recommend that we should work hard, make all we can, and give all we can. Rather, this parable is a clear judgment against those who think they deserve what they have earned, as well as those who do not know how precious is the gift that they have been given. The master gives the servants the talents in relation to their abilities. The servants don't earn those talents. They're not tests to see if the servant is worthy. If they'd been unworthy, they wouldn't have been given anything at all. The master gives graciously. And a lot of the focal point of this parable is about the perspective that the servants have toward these gifts. The third servant is afraid because of the view he has of the master and the talent. For this servant, the talent can only be used or lost, or used up or lost. The talent then is not a gift, but it's a possession that he feels he has to guard and keep. He views that talent through the lens of scarcity, a zero-sum game for him. If someone else gets, someone else loses. But the other two servants, well, they see the talents not as possessions, but as gifts as they were meant to be. Securing those gifts is to lose them. And these two servants then use the talents in that spirit, gifts that are meant to be given. It is the same for us. When Christ so graciously gives us his name, when we are called Christians in the waters of baptism, we are entrusted with a gift. We are given a life that is about following Jesus. When we are sealed with the Holy Spirit and marked with the cross of Christ forever, we're given a gift that some try to protect and that some believe is worthless. Again, Hauerwas writes, Jesus' disciples are not called to do great things, although great things may happen. Rather, Jesus' disciples are called to do the work that Jesus has given us to do. Work as simple and as hard as learning to tell the truth and to love our enemies. Such work is the joy that our master invites us to share. Sometimes we treat the great gift of baptism that way. If we see it as nothing other than a get-out-of-jail-free card, a fireproofing, then we think it's a possession and we hold on to it. We don't have to do anything about it. It's ours. We keep it and we protect it. If, however, we see the gift of baptism as an initiation into a life of following Jesus, a way of entering into a life that we get to make God's grace and love known, it begins something inside of us that we see can be used and given away Jesus gives us abundant gifts in the call to discipleship. Grace and peace and love and joy and forgiveness and gifts that are meant to be used in the same spirit that we have been given them. These gifts are meant to be used in service to others. Our lives of discipleship are not zero-sum games, but overflow with the goodness of God. To engage in this sort of life is the zero-sum game life, is to engage in a pointless existence where we are just used up. But Christ calls us to enter into the reality of God's kingdom. And that kingdom is coming, to be sure. It can't be stopped. Following Jesus' call and living in this kingdom life can mean such things as loving God and neighbor, friends and enemies alike, speaking truthfully, practicing forgiveness. Christ calls us to a life of unimagined richness in following him. Discipleship is a joy into which we are brought ever more fully and at the end are welcomed into a great and everlasting feast. This is the gift-wrapped life. This is what is gift-wrapped and set before us. To be workers in God's kingdom. This is a joy into which we are welcomed, and it is meant to pervade our entire existence, touching everything. Thanks be to God.